Local government will come to order. It is Thursday, May 1st, 2025, and the time is 5 p.m. The first item on the agenda is House File 2309, Senator Port.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we could move the A1 to put the DE in front of members.
Certainly. Senator May Quaid moves the A1. All in favor say aye. Aye. All opposed say no. The A1 is adopted. Senator Port.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you so much for meeting tonight and giving us a little time to talk with you about land use and zoning in Minnesota. A little bit of background on this bill. Last year, we brought a collection of zoning and land use reform bills to the legislature and had a robust discussion throughout the year in both the House and the Senate. None of the bills passed, but we kept working through the interim. Over the last year, continuously meeting with stakeholders from the coalition, working towards zoning and land use reform to those who have concerns. The reason that we've not given up on this legislation is that we have a housing crisis in the state of Minnesota. And part of the reason is that land use and zoning restrictions make it difficult and more expensive to build housing in this state. The median cost of a new single-family home in Minnesota is $540,000. There is no county in Minnesota where a median family income can afford a median home price. In fact, to afford the median home price in the state requires an income of $98,000. None of the top five most in-demand jobs in Minnesota can afford that. The average age of a first-time homebuyer in Minnesota is now 38 years old. Seniors can't downsize. Young people can't afford to buy in the communities where they grew up. These are problems that we can fix.
Thank you, Senator Port. Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the committee hearing this bill as well. And one of the reasons that I really care about this issue of housing reform is because I hear about it a lot from my constituents. I'll be talking with them and they'll say, you know, we were told that if we went to school, worked hard, got a job, that the next step on our American dream was homeownership. And we are seeing that that is becoming a dream that is is becoming out of reach for many hardworking Minnesotans. And so I'm excited to be co-presenting the package before the committee today with Senator Port to talk through how we can start to address some of the challenges that we see in Minnesota's housing market.
Thank you, Senator Rasmussen.
And then, Mr. Chair, if I could just do a brief walkthrough of the bill. So we started this session with seven unique bills, each targeting an aspect of the problem and a different type of housing. From starter homes to revitalizing main streets to increasing density near public transportation. The DE in front of you is a whittled away, watered down version that does the very least that we owe to our communities. This DE ends some HOA restrictions by preventing local governments from requiring homeowners associations and adding unnecessary features which require common management. Members, at a time when 84% of new homes are built in an HOA, it's no longer an option or a choice, and this provision promotes flexibility and reduces cost. The DE also reduces costs by preventing local governments from imposing arbitrary and overly restrictive building design mandates, especially around exterior materials, building features, and garage sizes. The DE eliminates excessive parking mandates by capping the maximum amount of required parking at one spot per residential unit, with exceptions for ADA requirements. Many cities require a 2-to-3-car garage, with each spot adding about $200 a month to a mortgage payment. The DE streamlines approval by requiring local governments to establish clear, timely processes for homes consistent with their comprehensive plans. Many such homes are currently forced into conditional processes that create delays, increase costs, and kill new homes. Zoning permits for new homes that comply with the city's ability to, the zoning rules that they have the ability to put into place should be approved. And while maintaining reasonable opportunities for community to input on those constructions. Whether it's intended or not, our current zoning restrictions have effectively made it illegal to build affordable homes. This DE presents a start to a collective statewide solution to a collective statewide problem. We need to build more, faster, and more affordably. The system that facilitated this current crisis cannot address the scope of the problem. Housing reform will enable local leaders to address the challenges at the speed that's required. If we focus just on who has the power, rather than how to work together to find solutions, we'll never address the issue, and Minnesotans will continue to suffer as a result. And if I could turn it back to Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Senator Port. Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill allows for local control, but what it does is it limits local out of control. And I just want to talk briefly about a few examples of how these unnecessary regulations impact Minnesotans and their ability to afford a home. First, I'll talk about HOA requirements. There's a Minnesota city that requires smaller lots to have two separate lots, a lot for the home and then a common outlot for all green space, for their driveway, et cetera. This means that the homeowner owns to the outside wall of their home and the HOA owns the surrounding land. This city effectively prohibits Minnesotans from owning their front yard. We also see cities that require what is typically public infrastructure to be privately owned and maintained, such as roads and parks. This unfairly shifts costs onto new home development. Second, I'll talk about aesthetic design elements. Many cities ban vinyl siding on the fronts of homes. In a previous committee hearing, a senator said that they didn't want homes with beige vinyl siding everywhere. And after the hearing, I went up to that senator and told this senator that I grew up in a house with beige vinyl siding and turned out okay. Another Minnesota city requires three-car garages. It requires that you have a three-car garage if you're gonna have a single-family home. And that, what we hear from the builders, is that adds an additional $40,000 in cost versus a two-car garage. On the issue of parking, we have another Minnesota city that is requiring enclosed garages for a specialized housing project for veterans, where only 20% of residents are estimated to own cars. Because of this requirement, fewer veterans will have access to housing. And lastly, Mr. Chair, on the administrative review reform, in a city that I actually represent, Habitat for Humanity is looking to build some homes. The homes fit all requirements that are imposed by the city, including their minimum lot size requirement. But there are some residents of this city who have complained to the city government and said that they don't want residents who qualify for a Habitat home as their neighbors. With this bill, the city would be unable to tie up a project like that with planning commission meetings and unreasonable objections. If Habitat for Humanity meets the city's requirements, they should be able to get administrative approval. All of these unnecessary requirements hurt property rights here in Minnesota and can result in economic redlining. On housing policy, the aspiration ought to be that Minnesotans pick which communities they live in, not let communities pick which Minnesotans get to live there. These reforms will make progress on that aspiration. Mr. Chair and members, you have probably heard that some local officials are opposed to the reforms in front of this committee. But I want to tell you that there are thousands of your constituents who want more housing options in their community and will benefit from these common sense reforms. And that is why we have a diverse group of supporters for the proposal in front of you today. From Isaiah on the left to Americans for Prosperity on the right, home builders to AARP and Habitat for Humanity all support these reforms. And with that, Mr. Chair, we're happy to turn it over to testifiers.
Thank you, Senator Rasmussen. Okay, so we do have a growing list of testifiers here. We ask for cooperation. We would like to give a minute each to each testifier, and I will be calling up two at a time, and staff will be taking the timer, keeping track of the time. First up, we have Sean Nelson, from city council member from Bloomington City, And I would also have line up next, someone online, right? Is that correct? And Mavity from Minnesota Housing Partnership. Oh, okay. Susan Arntz from City of Mankato should be online with us. All right, Councilmember Nelson, welcome to the State Local Government Committee. You may begin.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. I am Sean Nelson. I am a licensed building contractor, member of the Bloomington City Council, also a board member of VEEP, which is one of the largest food shelves and also provides housing assistance to Bloomington, Ridgefield, and Edina. I am here to talk about what Bloomington has done, but I'm not a representative at this time of Bloomington here, but I'm talking about what we've done. Starting in 2000, we recognized this challenge and developed the Opportunity Housing Ordinance, where we gave a set of 13 tools that we did since to incentivize and to promote housing. We have since worked on single family zoning ordinances. We are working on the missing middle, and we have already streamlined our administrative process. So our staff, if it meets all of the conditions, can approve it without having to go through multiple steps in the hearing. And I'd just like to tell you what the results of all of these things have been. We have looked at, we've had 11 different developments that have been already constructed, three under construction, and we have, the Met Council has goals for us, 2,300 new housing units in Bloomington. We've already built and approved over 2,500. 25% of those are affordable at 60% AMI or less. We also, outside of those that are affordable, that 25%, 80% accounts for nearly over 100 of those units. We have been very successful by doing the things that you are talking about here. Our Opportunity Housing Ordinance, in particular, the two top things that developers have used in this are parking stall reduction. That's one of the things here. The second item is alternative exterior materials. We are using this to successfully build homes for people in our community, and we encourage you to allow that to happen throughout the entire region, because the reality is if we don't do that everywhere, we only do that in Bloomington, we're still impacted by that. We have higher rents. We have particularly most lower priced houses, they get inflated because we can't build entry-level houses throughout other communities, and those people then end up having to pay higher property taxes. As you know, the system basically adjusts for that, and so we are very concerned about those things as a city council member. What we have been doing with parking reductions, with exterior facade, with allowing a streamlined approach to approvals, with what we've done on the single family, which I think has been sort of taken out of a little bit of this, has been working. We have since 2000 been proving it, and again, we have built more units than what the Met Council requested of Bloomington, and we're asking for this to be a regional solution, a statewide solution to the problem, because we've proven that it can work in Bloomington. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Nelson. We have online with us Susan Arntz, manager, city manager from City of Mankato.
Good afternoon,
please,
Chair.
Please state your name and you may proceed.
Yeah, good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Susan Arntz. I serve as the city manager for the City of Mankato and also represent the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities this afternoon. I want to express our continued concerns with this bill. While we appreciate several of the improvements and have monitored several of the different drafts over the last several days, a few provisions still pose challenges for Greater Minnesota Cities. First, the bill is based on a flawed premise. Restrictive local policies are not the primary reason for the housing shortage. Factors like construction costs, interest rates, assessed market values, and land prices also play a large role in the lack of housing development. Assessed market values are a function of the private market, not zoning. Mankato and many other cities are already acting in good faith to support development. Second, the parking requirement of one space per unit may sound reasonable, but it doesn't reflect one concern about senior citizens and other people who need caregivers or have deliveries or have other drivers in their home. I've worked in communities where developers will build the bare minimum and then they have no guest parking, and it does create a problem, and the developers will be long gone when those issues become present. Third and last, managing public input by moving project approvals to an administrative process is not like approving a fence. It silences community voices. Public hearings aren't red tape. They're a vital part of democratic planning. Please don't take the community out of community development. This bill imposes a one-size-fits-all approach that ignores local differences and punishes proactive cities. Thank you.
Thank you, City Manager Arntz. So next up, we have Bradley Sheppy from Minnetonka and Tony Wiener from Cardinal Home Builders. Could you make your way to the table? Following them, next up will be Rihanna Lee and Jill Hutmaker. So it's first up, Mr. Bradley Sheppy.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Welcome to the State and Local Government Committee. Please state your name for the record, and you may begin.
Thank you very much. My name is Bradley Sheppy. I'm a former Minnetonka Council member and real estate attorney. Thank you very much to the chair and the committee for having us here today. Just going to make three main points today. First, this is a different proposal. This is a bottom-up proposal to truly deliver on housing supply. It is much different from regulate and appropriate. And we're obviously in this position because regulate and appropriate, even $1 billion 2 years ago, has not moved the needle on housing. And so what we're trying to do through the reform is actually empower lots of local builders and local investors to do the work that's necessary. I also want to make a point about what this is doing in terms of duplexes. It allows more choice for people to live across their communities. The city of Minnetonka gets, you know, boasts about hitting Met Council goals and how much affordable housing, but the reality is that's dumped into warehousing into a couple locations in the city of Minnetonka, namely the Opus area and Ridgedale area. We're not actually adding new housing or affordable housing, non-single family housing, almost anywhere else. So when we're talking about other cities, this allows other people opportunities across all Minnesota's cities to have lower cost housing. And lastly, my point is deference. So from 2019 to 2023, I sat through many, many land use applications, staff recommendations, and with the exception of one, council genuinely listened to staff and the recommendation and followed that, with the exception of one cul-de-sac. So I think we need to also, my request for the committee in terms of thinking hard about this is, yes, without regulation, there still are tools for staff to make recommendations and for those local discussions to happen and say, this is different. You need to optionally add more or do something different. That tool is still there. Thank you for your time, everyone.
All right. Next up, Mr. Wiener, please state your name for the record, and you may begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and the committee members. My name is Tony Wiener. I'm vice president with Cardinal Home Builders. We develop and remodel, build homes in our region, primarily on the East Metro. In the East Metro, our company focuses its work on building quality, affordable homes for our customers. One of our areas of emphasis is one-level living, a very popular product among empty nesters and move-down buyers. As many of you know, it is extremely difficult to build these homes affordably. One roadblock that has come up for us in the past is having a city dictate to us what the exterior of the home should look like. One city wanted all homes in the neighborhood to have a more costly cement board siding on all sides as a standard. Another wanted a certain amount of stone on the front of the home as a standard, again, driving up costs. Our industry builds safe, energy-efficient, durable homes, and we know what our homeowners want. They want to own homes and communities that fit their lifestyles and priorities. As a custom builder, I'm willing to give them those options. I just don't think they should be forced into them. There are dozens of fixes that we need to make, but I'm hoping this committee can start shining the light on these aesthetic mandates and allow builders the option to build more affordable homes, helping to meet the market's demand. My family's been in the housing and real estate business for over 50 years. Some of you may have known my aunt, Deanna Wiener. She's a former state senator. She remembers a time when we could build for young families, our workforce, and move-down buyers at a price that was affordable. I don't think it's a surprise just how willing buyers are to purchase a simple, well-built home that doesn't have added cost to them from a city mandate. Thank you to Senator Port and Rasmussen for your commitment to greater affordability and housing options. These provisions are helpful in allowing greater homeowner choices for them to determine what is best for their family. We should be able to build safe, sustainable neighborhoods that are also affordable, but we have to reimagine a new and better way, and we have to do something. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Weiner. And next up, Ms. Lee, Director. Please state your name for the record, and you may begin.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Rihanna Lee, and I am the Legislative and Coalitions Director for the Americans for Prosperity chapter here in Minnesota. I am here today to support the direction of this bill, but also to voice concern that it just does not go far enough. And I think Senator Port said it very well, as did Senator Rasmussen. I want you to imagine trying to bake a cake, okay? And you need to meet multiple dietary preferences. You need to have it to be sugar-free, gluten-free. It needs to be nut-free, keto, vegan, and organic. And eventually, the recipe that you get becomes complicated, the end product becomes much more expensive, and the end result does not really meet anyone's needs or expectations. And that is what Minnesota's housing market is like under our current web of outdated and restrictive regulations that handcuff the free market to things that the government thinks should be required. These mandates inflate costs, they restrict supply, and they make it nearly impossible for real-time market needs to be met. Housing that isn't desired won't sell and be built. That is just how the market works. This bill makes progress, but the truth is we are still stuck in half measures, and we have known for years that it costs tens of thousands of dollars more to build a home here than in other states. That is not sustainable, and it is not fair to the Minnesotans trying to buy their first home. And the fact that the average age to to be a first-time home buyer that is 38 years old, when you can technically be a grandparent, that should be unacceptable to every single person here. And we appreciate the efforts behind this bill, but we urge you, please do not let politics stump the progress and uphold the status quo. Do not let this moment be stripped of its potential. The status quo is failing, and your constituents are not asking for more process. They are asking for an affordable place to live and build their American dream. The market is ready to respond, and we urge you to help get the government out of the way and help more Minnesotans have an affordable place to call home. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lee. Next, Ms. Hootmaker, please state your name for the record and you may begin.
Thank you. Chair Zhang and members, my name is Jill Hootmaker and I am the Director of Community Development for the City of Eagan. I'm here today testifying on behalf of the League of Minnesota Cities, Metro Cities, and the Municipal Legislative Commission, which together represent cities across the state. I would like to highlight a few key concerns that cities continue to have with the language of Senate File 2229. And I would like to start by adding that Eagan has been very successful in adding housing despite being a fully developed community. In the last 10 years, we've added 2,100 housing units, and we have another 1,000 units that are either approved or in the approval process. The bill would prohibit cities from requiring more than one parking space per residential unit, regardless of a community's access to public transit or walkability. With 78% of Eagan workers using private vehicles to commute to work, parking is a practical necessity for suburban residents. Regarding the bill's language regarding HOA, cities must have a sensible mechanism to ensure that private systems, such as private streets and stormwater ponds, are maintained, that the property does not become tax forfeited, and to prevent degradation of private infrastructure from negatively impacting public systems. And to be clear, in Eagan, it is developers who choose to build private streets because they do not want to build public streets to public standards to last for 50 years. The bill prohibits reasonable design considerations for large multifamily buildings. Prohibiting all aesthetic design standards for large multifamily buildings allows the development of monolithic, Soviet-style blocks that stratify low-income residents into buildings that appear to be of lower quality. The bill prohibits public hearings for all residential projects and mandates an overcomplicated administrative review process. Instead of public hearings, public feedback is limited to community meetings without substantive authority or due process protections. We know that meaningful civic engagement at the local level is a key component of democracy, and it builds trust in government and connection to communities. Thank you, Chair and members, for your time today.
Thank you. Next up, we have Mr. Daniel Lightfoot and Mr. Brian Rice, next up on the list. Following that will be Abdi Nasir Nurkati from Move Minnesota. Mr. Lightfoot, please state your name for the record, and you may begin.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Daniel Lightfoot, and I work with the League of Minnesota Cities. The League represents the collective interests of 841 of our member cities across the state. Appreciate the opportunity to testify today. Throughout this session and during the interim, the League has actively engaged with housing advocates and legislative authors on proposals related to zoning and land use preemption. When given time to review the language with our member cities, we've provided constructive feedback and suggested alternatives that aim to balance housing goals with the need for local flexibility and a workable process. While we do appreciate the discussions we've had with stakeholders and authors throughout the session and recognize that this amendment is narrower in scope than past versions, we must respectfully oppose the DE amendment due to several ongoing concerns which we have consistently raised. On parking, we appreciate the adjustment to apply this provision only to multifamily housing and allow one space per unit. However, applying this standard across all cities, regardless of access to transit or walkability, could lead to underparked developments. That pushes cars onto streets not designed for high-density parking. On the HOA provision, prohibiting cities from requiring homeowners HOA structures that may result in public infrastructure intended to be privately managed being shifted to city responsibility is a challenge. This places added maintenance and cost burdens on local taxpayers. It also complicates how cities ensure the upkeep of private common elements, which is often maintained through development agreements and not ordinances, as indicated in the bill. Section 6 on the aesthetics provision, this language prohibits cities from applying design standards to all residential development, not just single-family homes. Even basic elements like window transparency requirements for pedestrian-friendly or transit-oriented designs, and it's especially concerning for large multifamily or mixed-use projects where cities use standards to ensure compatibility and avoid stark differences between affordable and market-rate housing. We would suggest limiting the scope of this provision to buildings built to the residential code and removing vague, undefined terms and language currently in the bill. Lastly, on the administrative review section, this section would require, again, all cities to approve residential development in their entirety administratively and eliminate public hearings. That removes a key due process protection for residents who may be impacted by development. While we appreciate the addition in lines 5.10 to 5.12 that appear to solve the uncertainty around fees and dedications for parks and infrastructure, we still believe that this provision significantly overcomplicates existing processes and well-understood timeframes that currently exist in Minnesota Statutes 1599, as well as the subdivision process in Chapter 462.358. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, happy to stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lightfoot. Next up, Mr. Brian Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brian Rice. I'm an attorney in Minneapolis. I submitted a letter on this matter to Senator Port. I'm speaking today on behalf of the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. The Park Board is a constituent part of the city of Minneapolis. And in line with what Mr. Lightfoot just referenced on the A1 amendment to House File 2309, lines 5.9 to 5.12 are very significant. I want to thank Senator Port and her co-author, Senator Rasmussen, for considering our concerns on this. The legislation was originally drafted, could have had just a devastating effect on the Park Board and cities, because it could have been read to exclude the application of dedication fees, which has been an essential function of city government throughout this state that applies to streets, roads, sewers, utility, gas, water, parks, park and recreation, playgrounds, trails, wetlands. I think this committee all knows, as a local government committee, how complicated cities are. And we worked for almost a decade to get, we call this in Minneapolis, the Dibble-Hornstein Act, because they worked for 10 years to pass to allow the Park Board, which this legislature created over 140 years ago, to run parks in the city of Minneapolis. But everything wears out, and parks wear out. And we were lucky that this law passed in 2013. Since then, over 20,000 units of housing have been added to the city of Minneapolis. Not all of those housing units have paid this dedication fee, because Senator Dibble had the wisdom many years ago to exempt affordable housing from this fee. But this fee pays for, critically, the park infrastructure in Minneapolis. And those dollars go to our neighborhood parks, but also to our regional parks, with the, you know, Senator Sudzinski knows, in working on funding those projects, these dollars are absolutely critical for every municipal function that happens. So again, we thank Senator Port for listening to these concerns, because housing and local government's a very complicated thing. So we appreciate their help in adding it or fixing that issue on lines 5.9 to 5.12 of the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Rice. Next up, Mr. Norcati.
Yes,
please,
sir.
State your name for the record, and you may begin.
Hi there. I'm Nas Norgadi from Move Minnesota Action. I'm our policy and community specialist. I'm in here in support of the legislation. Thanks for having me. And also, it's a special occasion because it's my first time testifying in front of my former government teacher. I'll only testify to one provision here, as I only have a minute. In 2021, as cities were exploring the potential of eliminating parking minimums on a local level, Move Minnesota conducted a study named The Hidden Impacts of Vehicle Parking and Parking Policy. With Minneapolis data, it was found that 1 year's worth of new parking development in that city took 940,000 square feet of space, equal to 16 football fields, and it cost $105 million to construct. It spurred 21,000 metric tons of CO2 emissions each year. Much of this parking wasn't needed or wanted. It was required by outdated parking policies that did not align with market or community needs. Today, you can do something about wasting fewer resources. We need to allow developers to respond to market conditions and neighborhood realities. We do not need high parking minimums to reinforce the need for cars instead of promoting more efficient and cheaper ways to travel, such as public transit, such as increasing neighborhood walkability. What we're doing is contributing to the increasing number of miles we're driving and increasing harmful climate pollution in the process. Our state's climate action framework sets a target of a 20% decrease in vehicle miles traveled per capita by 2050 and net zero emissions by that same year. If we're to be even remotely serious about meeting our climate goals, we have to move this forward. Thanks so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Ann Mavity. Please state your name for the record and you may begin.
Thank you. My name is Ann Mavity. I'm the Executive Director of Minnesota Housing Partnership. And thank you so much. I know it's been a long day. I really appreciate your attention to this really important bill. I'm here to testify in support of Senate File 2309, and also represent, in addition to Minnesota Housing Partnership, the Yes to Homes Coalition. I'm one of the co-chairs of this broad coalition of unexpected partners across the housing continuum that have all come together because we have a 100,000 unit shortage of homes in Minnesota. And we know that that's part of the state goals, it's regional goals, even cities have these goals to accomplish, to build more housing. And we need to work together to do that. I'm a former city council member, 3 terms in St. Louis Park. I served on the board of the League of Minnesota Cities. I served on the board of Metro Cities and was chair of the board of Metro Cities. I understand the city's perspective and how they have concerns, but this is the thing, we know together that the status quo is not working, that the current processes and regulations that have been set up to approve housing is simply not working by the outcomes. We have a shortage of housing. So we need to improve upon what was set in motion 40, 50, 60 years ago. The bottom line is that we need this legislation. So we know that you're going to be receiving a lot of legislation and testimony from local officials, and you're under a lot of pressure. And your lens is also not just to represent some of those elected officials in the cities, but your constituents who are desperate for housing and are trying to do that. And we are trying to solve this one project at a time, 40 units at a time, and we need 100,000 new units in order for Minnesota's children to thrive, for our businesses to attract employers, and for all of our communities to be strong. And we're not accomplishing it in status quo. So the bottom line is that these local controls and regulations are actually inhibiting what we need to accomplish. The last thing I just want to note is that you'll hear and you'll continue to hear about how important that is with local controls, but what is at stake actually is whether or not Minnesota has enough homes. And you are the only ones who really have this lens to be able to do that. So again, as a former city council member, as someone who wants to make sure that everyone in Minnesota has a home, we think collectively we can do this. But we need to release the innovation of the market. We need to be clear with our processes and regulations and release the ability to actually build and create more homes.
Thank you, ma'am. And then do we have anybody else that would like to testify on the bill today? Gone once, gone twice. All right, I'm going to like to open it up to member questions and comments on the bill. Senator Curran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the authors bringing a skinnier bill forward. But I still think, I don't think it I know we've had piles of conversations and all the ideas. I think it'll be, even where it's at today, it still causes great consternation in every single one of my cities. And the challenges that are described, we don't have most of them. And I think we have a whole host of other regulatory pieces outside of the building of it, on the builders and employers and the promulgation of code regulation and all of those things that have unleashed on the building of homes in Minnesota. And so I don't think this moves the needle much. And so I know it's go back. We've vetted this a ton, but I don't think this is still the answer. So I'll be a no. And unfortunately, my every single one of my cities are a heck no. So I'll be a no. And with that, Mr. Chair, I request a roll call.
Certainly, roll call being requested. Roll call will be given. We have next up, Senator McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Port, Senator Rasmussen. I want to thank you for bringing this. It was so enlightening to hear the testifiers, because I felt like it was this example for my life, this example for my parents' life, this example from my neighborhood. I live in a beautiful neighborhood. It was built in the 70s, and if you looked at one home, you would not be able to guess what the next home next door looked like. You just would not be able to. You have a carport garage next to a four-car garage house. You have a one-level, like, three-bedroom Rambler next to a six-bedroom home. They have no continuity, and I love it, because every single person who built a home in that house or a home in that neighborhood built it in the 70s and 80s, where they didn't have to have aesthetic mandates and a certain number of cars for their garage. And there's a reason why people still live in those homes from when they built them, because they can afford them. My parents live in a house in Apple Valley that they own outright. They own outright, and they would love to sell their house and have maybe like a place that they go to for a few weeks in the winter and then rent a place, but they can't because they're terrified that the cost of housing will be so high that the, you know, what they sell their house for, which is more than double what they bought it for 30 years ago, won't cover till they pass away. That is the situation we're living in right now. And we can look at all of the things that have happened since my house was built in 1977 or their house was built in 1999 and see that that is what's contributing to this really, really high increase. And so I loved the big bill. I thought it was really great work. And I think just for folks who might be opposed to this bill, when you have Americans for Prosperity and Aaron May Quaid on the same side, you should be worried. And when you have two great senators who are working together on this, like, you know that really great work has gone into it. And so I'll be a yes on your bill. And I am not afraid of beige vinyl siding in my neighborhood. I grew up in a blue vinyl siding home, and I also turned up fine-ish. So I thank you for your work on this. And I think, I understand there are local elected officials that are concerned, but we really narrowed it down to like the bare minimum. And I think that we should start here. I would love to see the rest of this come back. And I would like us to continue to move that forward. But there's a little bit of fear-mongering, you know, like the beige vinyl siding is one of them. And that happened with ADUs as well, and on and on and on. But this is about making sure that we can have people live in our communities. And if they don't pick the exact siding or the exact window boxes that we might have wanted them to pick, like, it will be okay. Our kids can still go to school. And I think that that's good. So I will be a yes vote on your bill, and I thank you for all your work.
Thank you, Senator McQuaid. Next up, Senator Mr. Gus. Chair. Oh, Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to briefly respond to the conversation, and I appreciate the comments from members. I do just want to also say that I'm grateful to critics of this bill, too, because I have appreciated the feedback, and I think the DE in front of you reflects a lot of the feedback that we've heard and from conversations that I've had with local elected officials in my area. I do think it's important, though, that some of the letters in your packet or some of the testimonies provided to the committee, I don't think actually describes what's in front of you. And I'll use one example is a letter in your packet from the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. And I'm just going to read from this letter briefly. Quote, we could see new housing with few or no windows in residential areas, McMansions that dwarf the surrounding neighbors, or Soviet-style apartment houses. And I just, Mr. Chair, want to make it very clear that you cannot build any residential building in Minnesota without windows. That's just in our building code. And I wish I would have brought the building code here and I could have put it on the desk. And you could have seen all the requirements that every single residential structure will have to meet if this bill becomes law. I also wanted to point out to just give one sense of how we've addressed some of the concerns that cities have rightly brought up. For example, on the HOA preemption, we very clearly have on page 1, line 21 and 22, nothing in this section prohibits a county or we have other part of municipality from adopting or enforcing ordinances relating to the maintenance or insurance of private common areas. That addresses all of whether it's a private road that an HOA is going to maintain or other infrastructure. That's something that a city could still point to. We just are basically making it so that cities can't require you to build a park and maintain a park, or to make it so you can't own your own front yard. And so I just want to make sure that when we're talking about this, I appreciate the feedback. It's made this bill better. But I also want to make sure that we're describing accurately the bill in front of the committee. And I would just say, Mr. Chair, to my conservative colleagues, this, one of the reasons I'm here as a conservative and have been proud to work on this bill is that this proposal is pro-property rights. It enhances property rights for Minnesotans. It also is pro-free market. This is a free market solution to the housing problem. And is it going to solve everything? No. But I think it's a step in the right direction that's meaningful. If you're concerned about government overreach, this limits the power of government to have control over people's lives. And this bill also reduces red tape and regulations. And I just think that's an important thing when we're looking at how to address the housing crisis. There's many features to it, but this will have a meaningful impact. And that's what we hear from Minnesota home builders.
Thank you, Senator Rasmussen. Senator Port, and then after Senator Port, it will be Senator Gustafson.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Chair. Thank you, members. Just to add on to that, I also want to say the input on this bill, aside from the varied advocates on it, has been incredibly bipartisan inside our chambers, in both the House and the Senate, throughout the interim. And also, I will point out, during the month where the House, the different parties in the House were not speaking to each other, and were having some pretty intense differences, we still met every week, and members from both parties worked diligently on this, worked side by side collaboratively on this in a moment when they frankly couldn't even be in the same room together on any other issues. And that has stayed this way like through the entire focus of these bills. All 8 of the bills had bipartisan authors. All of those authors have stayed engaged, have continued to offer feedback, and I will say we have been happy to continue to take feedback, even from, I think Senator Barr offered us some feedback yesterday that we took and incorporated into the bill. We are open to feedback to make these concepts work. What we are not open to, and I think like have gotten to the point with this bill where like we're down to the very like skin and bones of these policies, is just an answer of no. If you want to help us make it better, great, we're in. If you want to help us make it work and make it work for your city, make it a process that works, great. What we are not, I think have sort of drawn the line with this bill is that we have to do something. People are begging for affordable housing. We have to do something. And this bill really is, the bare minimum of what we can do.
Thank you, Senator Port. Next up, Senator Gustafson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, let me just start by saying, I said this last year too, and I mean it, I support affordable housing. I support expanding options for Minnesotans who are being priced out of their communities. I know it's a goal that's shared by this author, both of the authors, and many in the room. But this bill, in my view, is the wrong approach. This is not about whether or not we build more homes. It's about who gets to decide how we grow and whether we trust residents to be partners in shaping that growth. The bill overrides, as I see it now, even the smaller version, which I appreciate all of the work that went into it. But the bill still overrides rather than partners with local government. It applies this one-size-fits-all framework, and I think about my own district. All 9 cities, again, in my district are also against this. But I think about how different North Oaks is with White Bear Lake Township. They're just vastly different. So infrastructure can also be an afterthought. We just can't do it. White Bear Lake. White Bear Lake, where we're already in the middle of a water sustainability crisis. This kind of unchecked growth would be devastating to our community, much like we talk about the water-intensive data centers. If we had, we should be asking serious questions about what it would look like if we had overdevelopment in our cities. And this would create that kind of a situation potentially. The shifts power towards developers, not communities. So the bill is written in a way that favors large corporate developers over cities and residents. It removes guardrails that help ensure new developments. I really, really want to support this bill, but I just keep coming back to the way it is centered on who is building it. So the bill may change where we build, but it doesn't guarantee what we build or who it's affordable for. I'm also not seeing a guarantee of affordability. So yes, more houses theoretically would mean that prices come down, but those houses or apartment buildings or whatever they are aren't guaranteed to be affordable. The average rent in my district is over $2,000. I think about like my cities and I'm looking at what they're doing. I heard the authors talk about like more, faster, more affordability. This is why it should stay with city planning commissions. I cannot say how strongly I feel about that. The bill changes where we build, and again, it doesn't, it just, what we build, who it's affordable for have not been addressed. Quickly, I'm looking at some of the, like my city of White Bear Lake, they write insufficient focus on affordable housing creation. The proposed bills offer minimal incentives for affordable housing development. They seem tailored to benefit developers rather than to address the fundamental issue of affordability. They go on to say that by attributing problems solely to local regulations, the bills overlook critical economic factors. Simply eliminating municipality oversight would not sufficiently increase housing production to curb price hikes. Finally, it could displace lower-income residents, increase strain on public infrastructure, parking requirements. Additionally, the language in these bills could shift the cost of development to current taxpayers. So as for the examples that are shared in the opening statement, those are heartbreaking, and I hear those are, I'm sure those are very real examples that are happening in our state. And that's terrible. But those residents should fight those restrictions in their cities and not punish cities who are doing it right, who are really making really good efforts with their own planning commissions to do this right, create more housing, but do it in a way that's appropriate to their communities. They know their communities better than we do here at the Capitol. And I want to let them have that moment.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Gustafson, Senator, Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to respond to a couple items. I appreciate Senator Gustafson's comments, but I just want to make sure that members know what the bill in front of them would do. Senator Gustafson made the comment that this changes where we build. And I just want to be clear, Mr. Chair, that nothing in this bill impacts zoning. If you had a city that wants to have single family in a certain spot and not have single family in another spot, this bill does nothing on zoning. It does not change where we build in any way. I also wanted to talk about the question around density. We did have earlier legislation that would have looked at how we could enable more density in our cities. This bill, if this becomes law, a city could have a 5-acre minimum lot size. There's nothing that forces density in this proposal. And so I just want to be very clear that we're still leaving a lot of local control in the hands of local elected officials. Even on the administrative process, everything has to be complied with if they're going to go through that administrative process. They have to fit all the rules, check all the boxes. And so what this does do is it limits when local government goes out of control and they're infringing on property rights, when they're putting excessive costs onto homeowners and potential homeowners that have nothing to do with public health, safety, and general welfare.
Thank you, Senator Rasmussen. Senator Port.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to add just a little bit. You know, I think when we talk about, you know, this is just one solution for a big problem, that's true. My housing bill has a lot of other solutions too, because we write bills all the time that are focused on one piece of a problem. That's most of what we do here. And looking at it holistically is really important. It's why having each city have their own, like, difference of how they deal with a development or a single home or a multifamily project, having that be different all over the place isn't meeting our goals. The Met Council sort of oversees the metro area for comp plans and affordable housing goals. Over the last 10 years, cities have met 14% of the Met Council goals. So we're not getting there. Like, the system just isn't working. And, you know, we heard from the gentleman from Bloomington who said, we are doing all of this. Like, please don't make us do it alone. And I think that is where we really are at a statewide solution point, because this is a statewide problem. Affordable housing is affecting every single one of your communities, the need for affordable housing. And this requires us to all pitch in and do what we can. Is this bill going to solve affordable housing? Hell no. Like, this is not going to solve the 100,000 homes we need. This is not going to bring down the price of rent of $2,000 in our communities overnight. It's not. But we passed a $1 billion bill out of my committee 2 years ago, and three quarters of the development money that we spent in that bill is still sitting there because projects take so long to get approved. We can't build them yet. We're waiting for approval over and over and over again. So when cities come and say, we need money, we gave you money. We are trying to build these units. We are trying to build developments, and they can't get approval. And that is the piece that this, in a very, very small way, attempts to adjust. It's not gonna, you know, overnight result in hundreds of thousands of homes being built, but it is going to move the needle a little bit. And we need every little bit to do that at this point.
Thank you, Senator Port. Next up was Senator Johnson Stewart.
Thank you. Thank you, committee members. Thank you, Senator Port and Senator Rasmussen, for your super evident commitment to this issue. I love that it's bipartisan. I remember last year when this bill came before the legislature thinking, oh my God, I'm so glad I don't have to vote on it, because it is so controversial, right? It is really controversial. And I got sworn in November, and the first thing that I had people outside my door wanting to talk to me about was this issue. And it is a very complicated issue, so much so that I remember people talking to me and I would have to stop and say, okay, now wait, are you for this bill or against this bill? Because there are literally, there are tens of issues related to affordable housing, and I support absolutely, I am right there. We must solve this issue. I live in Minnetonka. Minnetonka has done great work in doing all kinds of innovative projects. Brad Sheppy is my across-the-street neighbor. He served on the city council for years, and he and I would talk very frequently about the implications of minimum parking. Brad has a four-story parking garage outside his back, the back of his house right now, because of the parking requirements in the city of Minnetonka. I have done my very best to listen to so many of my friends who are in the gallery, who represent Faith in Minnesota, Neighbors for More Neighbors, but also the cities and the counties. I got in big trouble signing on to a bill early on, and then I heard from nearly every city engineer in Minnesota about why that was a bad idea. There is no clear-cut yay or nay here. I've met with my cities. Keep in mind, I represent 16, which is a minimal number compared to some of my Republican colleagues. But cities like Excelsior, who I asked to explain why aesthetic minimums are important to them, thinking that they were a way to be exclusive or keep people out, and the city planner said it's the only way we can control the kinds of houses that get rebuilt when people tear down existing homes. And I have to say, I won't name names, but there's a community that a friend of mine lives in, pretty close to here, that the streetscape is not attractive. There's no minimum setbacks. The houses that have been built where cute little bungalows used to sit are, frankly, just very unattractive. They don't have aesthetic minimums or setbacks. And while, yes, and by the way, they're not affordable. My friend paid $700,000 for his house that was rebuilt there. So aesthetic minimums aren't always connected to exclusivity. Sometimes they're connected to maintaining the look and feel. Wayzata is another one of my cities. And right now, I couldn't afford a house in Wayzata. And not like, you know, I make a huge amount of money, but I'm a 60-year-old who just sold a business, and my husband and I have worked for 40 years to build equity in our home. And we don't live in Wayzata, but there's nobody who can afford to live there that makes a living like we do. And so this is a huge problem. I really refuse to be slotted into this false choice of you're for this bill or you're against the idea that we should build more housing or we should make life more affordable for people. And so I've started working with my mayors, and we are coming up with a different approach. In the words of one of my mayors, who lives in a community with very few residents and the median home value is $2 million, every one of the homes in that community is within 200 feet of the Lake Minnetonka shoreline, so they have all kinds of restrictions. We have, in his words, we have lots of money, and we care about this issue. Let's find some ways that we can be a part of the solution. So I'm meeting with my mayors and the community development officers and planners, and we're going to come up with some ideas for incentives for communities that they're built out. They don't have, you know, it is just unreasonable to just maybe optimize the idea of a duplex or multifamily building in a city like Minnetonka Beach or Tonka Bay. It just, we can wish it and think it's a good idea, but in many communities it just doesn't fit. So we are going to work on creating some ideas that will incentivize the building of affordable housing in places where it does work. We're going to work on funding that. And another thing I have lots of thoughts about is infrastructure. I have some bills to require money and funding for nonprofits and other ways that we might be able to fund housing, but I'm a little tardy to the party and I haven't come up with those ideas yet. I will also be voting no. I'm sorry to all my faith friends, and you know the human I am, you know the values we have, but I just didn't have time to really implement some of those ideas. So thank you, Senator Port. You and I have talked about this a lot, Senator Rasmussen. This is a great effort, and the door is not closed. We'll continue to come up with some other ideas, and I really appreciate the work.
Thank you, Senator Johnson, Senator Fate, then Senator Carlson, then Senator Lang.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be very brief, and I just want to say thank you to both Senators Rasmussen and Chair Senator Port for your hard work on this. I know it took a lot of effort, a lot of concessions, and although this isn't everything that you wanted or I wanted or we wanted in this bill, it's a very good first step in addressing our housing supply and affordability. And there are things like my parking bill where we're eliminating minimum parking mandates. It doesn't go as far as that, but I still think it does a really good first step in driving down and reducing things like development costs so that it doesn't get pushed on to the consumers, which is one thing that I was concerned about as well. But I just wanted to highlight your hard work on this and say I am a strong yes on this. I will be voting yes on this, and I'm looking forward to continuing this work with both of you. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Fate. Senator Carlson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I'm having a lot of trouble with this because I don't like to overrule the cities that I represent. They all, and in fact, you know, I'm looking at the letters we have here, overwhelmingly, the cities are opposed to it. So there are some that, of course, like it. There are some nonprofits that like it. But I went through some of this with my family We had a farm in Eagan. It is now all houses. We actually led on some things like city water, city sewer, all improvements in and paid for. When you bought the lot, you bought everything. You didn't have anything that was unpaid for. Some other developments took a different approach. They hid who owned the power, the water, who had a well, who had a drain field for their sewer system, and the city of Eagan had to pick that up and pay for it. So there was a lot of things that back in the old days of a village of Eagan that were not mandated, and everybody else had to pay for them. So I'm concerned that when we mandate from the top that we're not allowing the cities who they know their you know, their municipality, they know their people, they know what they can do and what they can't do. The couple of things that I'm a little bit concerned about is have been left out of the bill now, and that is, for instance, should we be looking at our setbacks? I know in Eagan, they have setbacks that have gone through variances, and they now have smaller setbacks. Should we be looking at our lot sizes? My personal lot is a little more than a half acre. I don't need that kind of lawn to mow. And so I would be in favor of smaller lots. And that makes more room for more homes. But I don't think, my house is centered on the lot, so I don't know that I could have anything but maybe an ADU in the backyard. And I'm open to that, except that now we have an infrastructure problem where we don't have the power and the sewer and storm sewer that was put in to support that. So there are things that go into an awful lot of depth that the cities are making these decisions in their plans and in their zoning and how they make their decisions and how they grant their variances. And after talking to I haven't talked to the mayor very much, but I do have his texts, and he has done an excellent job in trying to meet these requirements for building housing that is that we need, that people are requesting. Yes, we need to be better at it, and I think we should be working on this a lot more. I think and I look at this problem as being it's a span. We go from people who are homeless that need homes to people who are employed and they want to buy their first home. And what we need to do is find the way to solve all of those in the middle. And so I'm a no on this amendment, but I think that I like it. I support the basic intent, but I don't support the method of doing it. And I'm sorry, Senator Port, this is where I'm coming from, but I think this should be a start. Like Senator Fateh said, this is a good start for discussion. And I, if you want to know more of what I think, replay Senator Gustafson's statements there, because hers were excellent. And if I could have said what she said, I wouldn't have needed to even go any further. But it's a serious issue here. It's serious about building homes that people can afford. But I think we do have some entities that are very happy with this. Sometimes people say, oh yes, you gotta do that. You, Carlson, you have to vote for this. And then I say, okay, can I build an ADU in your backyard? Can we split your lot for another home? Oh, no. Suddenly it's, they don't wanna do it because it's in my backyard. And that's what we have to get rid of, is this NIMBY feeling. And even if it means that sometimes maybe we have to elect different people to represent and to make the decisions in our cities, this is important enough to be seriously working on this. And I'm glad I hear from Senator Johnson Stewart that she's working with her mayors, because that's what we need. That's who we need to work with. That is who we need to work with. So I appreciate you bringing the bill, Senators Port and Rasmussen, but yeah, I'm going to have to wait until we get something better. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Carlson. Before I go to the lead, Senator Lang, is there any other members that would like to speak? Senator Lang.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, where to start on this one, right? You have a bipartisan group of legislators that offered a bill and have worked diligently on it. You have a bipartisan bicameral support system and, you know, people that are going to vote against this bill. And we had a group, you know, the testifiers that came and testified in front of us today, and I'm going to talk to all of you now. The Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, the League of Minnesota Cities, Minnesota Housing Partnership, those are all very inclusive words, but you guys have all dug your heels in on this issue and made it controversial. Now, if anything, we are the last ones that should be making these local decisions. But I'm telling you right now that there's a problem out there, and we're all feeling the pain. I've had developers in my office telling me that I have lots that I can't build on. I have landowners that own city lots or own vast pieces of land that cannot be developed because they cannot pencil it out. They can't make the dollars meet. This is something where the group of people sitting in this audience should be coming to the legislature with a solution, not digging their heels in. It really irritates me when we as a group have to make these decisions on a high level. This is something where this problem has been apparent for 9 years since I've been here, okay? We are always working on housing, but it never seems to get to the finish line. And the reason is because people dig their heels in. They say, no, we can't do this. This isn't blight we're talking about. This is houses. If we're arguing about siding colors in the legislature, something went wrong on your level. Way back. And I'm talking to the cities, I'm talking to the housing partnership groups. You guys need to get in a room and get on a whiteboard and start working some stuff out. This isn't a decision we should be making at this level, I'm sorry. This bill is so cut down from what it was. This bill says that you can't say that you need to have brick on the front of your house. Are you kidding me? Is that really what we're talking about? I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, but this is a problem that you guys need to fix and come to us with a solution, okay? Simple as that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Lang. I've never seen you so passionate before. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the conversations we had this really early on. One of the first meetings I took upon assuming the chair was this from both sides. And so I've asked both sides to work together to come back with something. But unfortunately, the original bill didn't make it through. I've been working with Senator Port. We've, settled on this skinnier version of the bill. I know all my cities are opposed to this. I have great cities, great mayors, great volunteers that volunteer on our economic development board, our zoning boards. But, I was a former city council member. But there is something that is wrong with how we are going about doing this. We are facing a housing crisis. We passed $1 billion, but it feels like it's not reaching the people out there in our communities. And so I would be in favor of this. I know that there is definitely more work that needs to be done. This bill, we are under no illusion that this bill solves the problem, but I will be a yes vote on this. And with that, do we have any closing comments from the authors?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, just a few things I want to say. First of all, our doors have always been open. We have never turned down a meeting with any group who wanted to talk to us about this ever, which has made our meeting calendars interesting. But we have been open to ideas for 2 years now. And we've taken a lot of them and incorporated them in a lot of different ways. And that remains true, regardless of how this vote goes today. Like, I'm not done working on this. I know Senator Rasmussen's not done working on this. There is more work to do, and we're going to continue to do it. We'd love to work with all of you. As far as incentives, I will say that that is not a new idea. It's something we've been talking about for years. It's why in 2023 we passed a quarter cent sales tax that goes directly to cities and counties for affordable housing in whatever way they choose. That was the incentive, right? That was the carrot. Some cities, like Minnetonka, returned Met Council money, incentive money, state and federal incentive money, rather than build affordable housing. Lakeville pays a fine to Met Council rather than build affordable housing. Incentives are out there, and communities are turning them down, turning them away, because they don't want that kind of housing in their communities. So while there are incredible cities all across the state of Minnesota, I think every city across the state of Minnesota has great parts to it, has great people living into it. And I think running for elected office at any level is an incredibly difficult job and puts you in situations that are really hard to navigate. And this is one of those. And I don't begrudge any of the mayors or city councilors who are standing up for local control. Like, I don't like it when the feds tell us what to do. You all know, I've had plenty to say about that, right, Andrew? I understand that they don't want the state coming in and telling them what to do. The problem is that this is creating a statewide problem, and it's my job as the housing chair to try to find a statewide solution. That's why we're doing this. I will say that all of our bills all along have allowed the cities to deny any development for infrastructure concerns, for safety and general welfare. That has been in every single bill. It keeps getting raised as a thing that's not in there, but it's been in every single bill. The very last thing I'll say is that this is really about Minnesotans. I know you're hearing from your cities that they don't support this, and I understand that your elected officials do not support this. But a few months ago, there was a YouGov poll across the state of Minnesota which said 75% of Minnesotans support allowing administrative approval, 63% say that owners should determine how much parking is needed, only 17% say their city is doing a good job of making homes affordable, 53% say to build more homes, bring down costs, versus 25% who say prioritize local control. And 80% say the legislature should take action. There's very few things that 80% of Minnesotans think that we should have a voice in. So that means something. And I hope members, as you take this vote, we understand that this is one small piece of it. We hope the conversation can continue, whether it does or not through this bill. It certainly will with my co-author and I. Senator Rasmussen, if you have closing comments.
Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I am very grateful for this conversation today and all the feedback that was made. And Mr. Chair, I have the privilege of representing 46 cities in the area that I represent. And I'm bringing forward this proposal today with Senator Port because this will help each of those communities thrive and grow. And as Senator Port talked about, we're not going to be able to subsidize our way out of the housing shortage. If we had $5 billion, we wouldn't be able to subsidize our way out of the housing shortage. We need to build more homes, and we need to let builders build the homes that people want and they can afford. I look at the city of Fergus Falls, where I live, and half of the homes in Fergus Falls would be illegal to build today. And they were built by World War II veterans coming home using the GI Bill, and they built what they could afford. And maybe it didn't have an attached garage. Maybe it was three bedrooms and one bathroom. But that's where they raised their family. And I think we need to get back to that core principle as a state and as a country that we value families, we value property rights, and this is a way to help move the ball forward. I'd ask for member support.
All right, thank you. And with that, staff will take the roll.
Chair Zhang?
Yes.
Vice Chair Gustafson?
No.
Vice Chair McQuaid?
Aye.
Senator Lang?
Aye.
Senator Barr?
Pass.
Senator Carlson?
No.
Senator Swatzinski?
No.
Senator Jaskowski?
Aye.
Senator Fateh?
Aye.
Senator Johnson Stewart? Senator Corian?
No.
Senator Miller?
No.
Mr. Chair, there are 6 noes and 5 ayes. Oh, sorry, 6 noes, 5 ayes, 1 pass.
There being 5 ayes and 6 noes and 1 pass, the amendment is not adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And next up, we will be moving on to our next bill on the agenda. We have Senate file. Sorry, we have Senate file 570, Senator Housechild. Senator Housechild, welcome to the State and Local Government Committee. Please begin with your presentation when you are ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I know this is why you all were here and stuck around, because of the importance of this bill. But in all seriousness, Mr. Chair, I've been working pretty diligently all session with a bipartisan group of legislators who are focused on making sure that Minnesota is a state that works. And what I mean by that is, when folks interact with our government, when people want to open up a business that could create jobs, when industry is looking at opportunities across the nation and even globally, we want them to make sure that they see Minnesota as a partner and as a state that can work for them. And so, Mr. Chair, I've been working with stakeholders across the spectrum, from environmental groups and tribes to the Chamber of Commerce and business groups, as well as the building and construction trades and other labor groups, to really come to a compromise bill on how we can improve the permitting process in Minnesota. And so, Mr. Chair, we came to an agreement in the Environment Committee, and we're able to get a unanimous vote in the Environment Committee for this proposal, and we sent it forward to the State and Local Government Committee. Full disclosure, this bill is also in the Environment Policy Omnibus, but we're dual tracking the bill just because of the importance of this bill. So, Mr. Chair, for our purposes today in the State and Local Government Committee, we are looking at Section 6. And what we're looking at here is for mandatory environmental impact statement projects. So these are very large industrial projects, highways, mining, power plants, large residential developments. Those types of large projects are mandatory environmental impact statement projects. And what we do with this has made it so that if you are already an automatic EIS project, i.e. you are a large scale project and are going to go through extensive environmental review, then we are making it so that an EAW, an environmental assessment worksheet, is not required. After feedback from stakeholders, mostly from community members and environmental groups, there was a concern that just ridding the EAW from the EIS process was maybe a little bit too far. So, Mr. Chair, what this does is it makes it so that there is still scoping and public process to the beginning parts of the EIS. So it still maintains sort of the public piece to the EIS process, which is what many of the groups wanted as part of the stakeholder engagement on this. So that's what is in front of us as part of this bill, but I'm also happy to talk about any other portions you would like, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Housechild. If that's okay, we'll go straight to the testifiers then. Andrew Morley. Please state your name for the record, and you may begin with your testimony.
Chairman Zhang, Ranking Minority Member Lang, and members of the committee, my name is Andrew Morley, and I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Our membership includes more than 6,300 businesses of all sizes from every industry across the state, along with over 500,000 employees. Thank you for the chance to testify on SF 570, legislation that updates our permitting process and has passed the Senate Environment, Climate, and Legacy Committee three times as of this morning. My comments today will be dedicated to Section 6 of the bill, which is the scope of today's hearing. For context, Senator Housechild's legislation provides needed updates to Minnesota's permitting process. Permitting in Minnesota takes too long, costs too much, and is often too uncertain for investment. According to the Minnesota Chamber Foundation report, Minnesota takes up to six times longer than comparable states to issue an air permit, to name one example. Section 6 of the bill streamlines the scoping process for mandatory category environmental impact statement projects. An EIS is the highest level of environmental review. Minnesota has in place rules that dictate certain projects automatically trigger an EIS. Under the current system, these mandatory category EIS projects require, prior to starting their EIS, a completed environmental assessment worksheet, which then doubles as a scoping document. Section 6 simply clarifies that a mandatory category EIS project does not need to complete an entire EAW. Instead, it requires a scoping document to identify the relevant issues to study as part of the EIS process. Thank you. I look forward to your questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Mr. Tom Johnson. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Tom Johnson, Government Relations Director for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and I also represent the Environmental Quality Board. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on Senate File 570. Similarly, I'll keep my comments to the relevant section, but first want to thank Senator Housechild for the great work on this bill and all the stakeholders that collaborated to get to where we are, which, if not fully supportive, all the stakeholders are at least equally uncomfortable, Mr. Chair, which I think is a sign of good policy. Regarding Section 6, putting on my Environmental Quality Board hat, the important parts of this process to the EQB are that we have a scoping process and an opportunity for public participation. And what's important about this bill is neither of those two pieces have been pulled out. We're just saying that the actual environmental assessment worksheet, as was described, is not the document that has to be used for that scoping process. So it will likely cut some time from the process, which is a good thing. I'll say there's just a small technical item that I talked to the senator about that we'll likely fix as we move through the process. But on page 13, where it mentions the process begins, we'll want to flesh out exactly where the process begins, and that's just so that we can make sure when we enter rulemaking, we can use that good cause exemption and we're not interpreting the law extensively. So we'll add a little bit of specificity to that portion as we move through the process, but otherwise the Environmental Quality Board and the MPCA are good with this section. And again, thank you for the opportunity to testify and happy to stand for questions.
All right, thank you. And with that, members of the committee, any questions or comments to Senator Housechild or the testifiers? Senator Housechild, any closing comments for us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate you all taking on this hearing for us, despite the late nature of it. This has really been a collaborative effort. This has been something that I think has been talked about in Minnesota for a very long time. Last session, you may remember, or you maybe won't, that we did make some progress on allowing agencies to work on coordinated project plans. So that was one step in the permitting efficiency process. And this is just the next step. And like I said, bringing all of these different stakeholders together who normally do not agree on hardly anything, and we're able to come to a place where at least nobody is opposed, I think that's a really important thing and how the process should work. So I'm really proud of the work we did. I'm really thankful to the building trades, to the chamber, to the MCEA, to the MPCA, to Conservation Minnesota, and other stakeholders who came to the table. So thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just say, I believe we're hoping to send this to finance.
Yep. Yes, thank Senator you. Housechild. All right. With that, seeing no further discussion, Senator Johnson Stewart moves that Senate File 570 is recommended to pass and re-refer to the Finance Committee. All in favor say aye. Aye. All opposed say no. Aye. The motion prevails. Senate File 570 is recommended to pass and re-refer to the Finance Committee. Thank you. And with that, members, we are adjourned.